two beer-making giants have forged the outline of a merger, even as little craft brewers swarm around their ankles. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. After several runs at this, there's news to date that the board of Miller has agreed to a $104 billion takeover by Budweiser, SAB Miller to be precise, and Anheuser-Busch InBev, both multinational conglomerates. Spiros Malandrakis is senior alcoholic drinks analyst at Euromonitor in London.
Most of the stockbrokers got really excited the last couple of weeks for obvious reasons. Now we're going to be crossing through the stage of accountants getting really happy about it. And the last stage is where the lawyers are getting really excited.
The lawyers who have to persuade regulators in Europe, China, the U.S. and beyond that a mega brewery of this scale won't illegally stifle competition. Listen to the numbers. In the United States, InBev has 45% of market share. SAB Miller has 25% equals 70%.
We know over the last couple of years, the major drivers in beer consumption have been microbrewers, small-scale breweries popping up in the US and in the UK primarily. This transition away from big beer offerings definitely poses some questions about the future of the mega brew corporation that is now in the making.
You see the microbreweries as you go through American towns, but one wonders if they actually pose a strategic threat at any level to the big brewers. You're saying it is cause for reflection, yes.
It is a major for reflection. I mean, markets like the U.S., for example, have been hemorrhaging sales for a very long time now. One of the key ways for these companies to absorb these fluctuations is creating new products, flavors, getting into cider or other categories that they were not into in the past, or buying out these small, innovative, and experimental craft brewers.
This evening, five leading Democratic presidential candidates take the stage for their first debate. It's to be held in Las Vegas, and Vegas will host three debates leading up to the election, one for Democrats, one for Republicans, and the final election debate next October. Nevada gives the candidates and their party a chance to win over voters in a swing state that has a growing, particularly Latino working class, and an economy that's swinging back to prosperity, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Nevada had a bad recession. Home prices crashed, unemployment soared. Now the state's on a roll. Unemployment's been cut in half. People are coming to play the slots. Some are staying to live.
At this point, our economy is finally starting to turn around.
University of Nevada economist Elliot Parker.
We have a lot of demand for building new houses, but we don't have enough people to build it. We don't have enough water.
In other words, Nevada faces problems of growth again. Good news in a state built on booms, says historian Michael Green. It's what the candidates will be pitching.
They have to get across that the national economy and the international economy, the recovery needs to continue the steps they're going to take.
Green says Nevada is solidly purple now and could go either way in 2016. Candidates want to woo the growing number of Hispanic union voters in Vegas and Reno, many of whom work in hospitality and construction, which are growing again. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Short-term interest rates controlled by the Fed are supposed to be the gas pedal, brake pedal for the economy, and affects, we keep saying, everything else in the economy, mortgages, deposit insurance. But as Marketplace's Sabri Benishaw reports, not so much your credit card.
Interest rates on car loans since the Great Recession dropped by half. Mortgage rates down by around 40%. What about your credit card rate?
I haven't noticed any change.
Yalissa Melendez from Queens. That is because there hasn't been a huge change. Just before the recession, the average rate was around 14%. They hopped around a little for a year or two and have settled at around 12% and have not really moved.
So people who carry a balance on their cards are paying average rates that are very similar to those of 2008.
Jill Gonzalez is an analyst for Wallet Hub. So if the Federal Reserve's primary interest rate deep at the beating heart of the economy went to zero, why didn't credit cards fall very much?
In a perfect world, that would definitely be the case. The problem is that banks are a business. So banks have been seeing lower returns on their investments, lower profits on home mortgages.
So, says Gonzalez, banks have used profits from credit cards to support their revenue, and that means interest rates are higher than they could be. The American Bankers Association says banks are still actually making a lower rate of return on credit cards than they used to. And chief economist James Chesson says running a credit card company is expensive no matter what the Federal Reserve does.
There's an enormous infrastructure that supports the credit card industry, all the call centers and all the equipment and neural networks that help protect against fraud.
One last reason our credit cards aren't paying a whole lot of attention to the Federal Reserve, risk.
Credit cards are unsecured loans.
Bill Hardkopf is with LowCards.com. Car loans, home loans, those are a little less risky because cars and homes can get repossessed. Credit cards aren't like that.
So if you go out and buy a stereo and you default on your credit card, the credit card issuer cannot come into your house and take your stereo.
That risk means credit card rates are higher than other rates. So really, nothing can dramatically move credit card rates down. Not recession, not the Federal Reserve, and probably not hell or high water either. In New York, I'm Sabri Benashour for Marketplace.
And this sounds like an April Fool's thing, but it's October, and to the best of our ability to fact check, it's true. Playboy is going to stop printing pictures of naked ladies in the magazine. It's part of a redesign set for next spring. This is partly a response to online pornography. What's left in Playboy magazine when nude women are removed? You were going to say the articles. I was going to say ads for whiskey. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Beatty Jong from Montclair State University today. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.